ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। यथा बलाब्रजं
सिद्धा
मयेन रंसि यथा क्षपा। यद् उद्दिश्य व्रतम् इदम् शेरुर् आर्याचनं सति याथा बला प्रजं सिद्धा मये मारंस यथा क्षपा। याद उद्दिश्य व्रतम् इदम् शेरुर् आर्याचनं सति याथा बला व्रजं सिद्धा मये मारंस यथा क्षपा। याद उद्दिश्य व्रतम् इदम् शेरुर् आर्याचनं सति Brajam, to Braj, Siddha, having achieved your desire, Maya, with me, Ima, these, Ramsyata, you will enjoy Kshapa, the nights. Yat.
Yat.
Which.
Which.
Udeshya.
Udeshya.
Having in mind.
Having in mind.
Vratam.
Vratam.
Vow.
Vow.
Idam.
Idam.
This.
This.
Cheru.
Cheru.
You executed.
You executed.
Arya.
Arya.
Of Goddess Katyayani.
Of Goddess Katyayani.
Archanam.
Archanam.
The worship.
The worship.
Sati.
Sati.
Being pure.
Being pure.
Go now, girls, and return to Braj. Your desire is fulfilled. For in my company you will enjoy the coming nights. After all, this was the purpose of your vow to worship Goddess Katyayani, O pure-hearted ones. Sri Shuka Uvacha Ityadista Bhagavata Labdha Kama Kumarika Jayantyastad Padam Bhojam Krishran Nirvi Vishur Brajam. Shukadev Goswami said, thus instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the young girls, their desire now fulfilled, could bring themselves only with great difficulty to return to the village of Braj, meditating all the while upon his lotus feet. Purport. The gopis' desire was fulfilled because Lord Krishna had agreed to act as their husband. A young girl can never spend the night with any man except her husband. And thus, when Krishna agreed to engage the girls in the nocturnal ras dance during the coming autumn season, in effect, he was agreeing to reciprocate their love for him in the role of a husband.
Om Gyan Timidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshuru Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadati Svapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Yudhapada Kamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vidham Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Harijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vidhamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamani Hari Priye Bhamsha Kalpatarubhyascha Asindubhya Evacha Patithanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. I am very grateful to be among you again. Thank you. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 22, entitled Krishna Steals the Gopis' Garments, Text 27 and 28. In Vrindavan, the place where Krishna performed his pastimes 5,000 years ago, and on a deeper spiritual level, the place where Krishna is forever performing his loving pastimes with his devotees. There are two places that are called Chirgat, which especially are worshipped and remembered for this particular pastime. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Vrindavan. At that time, it was a very lonely forest. There were Brijabasis doing some farming from place to place. Radha Kund, Sham Kund were practically forgotten. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested the six Goswamis to live their whole lives in the forest of Vrindavan for the purpose of demonstrating the highest principles of devotion in a spirit of renunciation. For impersonal philosophers, renunciation is a extremely essential principle, because this whole world is Maya, it is illusion. And if we want freedom from suffering, we must totally detach ourselves from everything of this world, from every activity, every word, every desire, everything. In the path of bhakti, we understand that whatever can be favorably utilized in Krishna's service is spiritual. And the devotee's desire is not to exterminate desire, but rather to purify the desire. That our every word, our every action, our every thought, and everything around us should be seen for the pleasure of Krishna. Samsidhir Hari Toshana. So the six Goswamis, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Gopal Bhatt Goswami, Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Jiva Goswami, they led lives to the highest extent as far as material renunciation. They had given up Raghunath Das Goswami, Rupan Sanatan Goswami, Jiva Goswami. They had extraordinary wealth, extraordinary facility of power, influence, enjoyment, and they left everything. And when they came to Vrindavan, they didn't even take enough money with them to build a straw hut. They came with nothing, and they remained with nothing. Even though one wealthy merchant was building a beautiful temple for Madan Mohan, Sanatana Goswami, along with the others, they still chose to sleep under a different tree every night, on the ground, in the hot summers, in the wet rainy seasons, in the freezing cold winters. They never had their own cooks or kitchens. They begged Madhukari. Madhukari means you get what you get. And they were not going to very wealthy Bombay industrialists for nice dinners. They were going to the homes of simple, poor Brijbasi farmers. And all they had to give them was some roti that was ground with a piece of stone, wheat ground with a piece of stone by hand, made into a roti, and maybe some chickpeas. And if they were given anything else, they would not even take it. They would just take some fried chickpeas and some roti. Sanatana Goswami, he was the prime minister of an entire kingdom, and the king shared all his wealth with tremendous abundance with Sanatana Goswami. And he would just take that wheat flour and mix it with some Yamuna water, make a ball with his hand, and just throw it in fire. He didn't even bother getting a metal plate to cook it on. Even that was opulence. Where to find a metal plate? He just made the ball and threw it in the fire and let it burn on the outside so it was somewhat cooked on the inside. And that's what he ate. And they wouldn't wear any new clothes. Whatever cloth was rejected by the poor Brijabasis and thrown on the roadside, they would pick up that and make a kopan. And it's not they had a closet with a wardrobe of kopans. It's just what they wore. This is what they were, how they were living. And they were so absorbed in devotional service, they practically had no time to sleep. They were chanting in kirtan, they were doing japa, chanting on their beads. They were studying the scriptures, discussing the scriptures, writing books. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told them to set the standard of the highest principles of renunciation in the spirit of devotion. Also to extract the essence of all knowledge, Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, they actually arranged for a whole library of scriptures to be brought to Vrindavan, so they could authoritatively extract the essence of all knowledge as the love of the Brijabasis in pure devotional service. Also to establish temples and to rediscover and excavate the holy places of pilgrimage. They did it very systematically and at the same time with an intuition and a grace that cannot be imitated. because they were all manjaris or intimate associates of Krishna in the spiritual world. They're in that eternal lila. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Radha Bhava Duti Suvalitam Nomi Krishna Swarupam, who is Radha and Krishna, was revealing to them everything. And the idea of discovering these places of Krishna's pastimes and building these temples was to invite people from all over India and eventually from all over the world to come to Vrindavan to actually experience what is Krishna, what is Radha, what is pure devotional service. So these great renunciates, these are some of the places they were establishing. One of the great holy places is Chirgat, which depicts this particular pastime. And Shukadev Goswami, what was his renunciation? He was Brahman realized. He had already attained mukti beyond all the dualities of material existence while he was in the womb of his mother. And most babies, they don't exert so much free will. You know, when it's time to be born, they're born. But Shukadev Goswami was not that kind of baby. When it was time to be born, forget it. I will be unborn, in the sense that I'm already born, because according to the Vedic conception, at the time of conception, that's when the child, the soul of that child, actually takes shelter within the womb of a mother. Then it's just a matter of the growing. The body starts growing around the soul, the subtle body. It's already there, and the gross body starts to form. But Shukadev Goswami, no. The world, so many dualities, so many illusions, so many distractions. I am self-satisfied. I have nothing to go into this world for. You see, the reason we're born in this world is because we want to enjoy on the material platform. As soon as we have no desires for material enjoyment, there's no possibility of rebirth in this world, according to the karmic laws. It's only if Krishna wants us to, for a higher purpose. So Shukadev Goswami had no material desires. How is it he had no material desires? Because he was Brahmananda. He was experiencing the bliss of Brahman. Total peace, total shanti. So everything of this world was insignificant, and he understood. He was actually the most profound learned scholar while in the womb of his mother. How powerful material energy is, he didn't want to deal with it. He was happy. So why change something when you're already completely happy? So he remained. And when he finally did come out by Krishna in Vyasadeva, his father's arrangement, there is that very well-known story where he was walking. He comes out of the room and walks out of the house into the forest. His father, you know, something, you know. There was no time for a name-giving ceremony, no time for first grains, no time for anything. He just walked out. So his father was going, following him, and they came upon that lake of water where there were some ladies bathing without clothes. And when they saw Shukadev Goswami, they just didn't even They were unaffected. They just carried on. When they saw his father, they became very embarrassed. And the reason is disclosed, because even though Vyasadeva was a self-realized person, an avatar, as a grihastha, he had to differentiate between the dualities of life. But Shukadeva Goswami, he actually didn't know the difference between male, female, any of these things, because he was completely beyond the world. And Shukadeva Goswami, the crest jewel of renunciates, is explaining this pastime with such reverence and devotion. And please, it is important to understand that when Krishna lived approximately 12 years in Vrindavan, he was performing incredible pastimes at every moment. And Shukadeva Goswami, he could actually speak on Krishna's leelas in Vrindavan for days of Brahma. But in this Srimad Bhagavatam, he has selected very key principal stories for us to learn from. And this is one of them. Out of all the unlimited, countless millions of pastimes that Krishna performed, he's selecting just some that are very, very important for us in order to attain pure devotional service. So today in Vrindavan, let us go back a little to where we were talking. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself. And he's teaching us how to love Krishna. So sometimes, I'm sure you have all encountered people say, of all the gods, why Krishna? I get that question so many times. Not only in India, even in the West. People say, of everyone, why Krishna? You know, there's Allah, and there's Jesus, and there's Jehovah, and there's Yahweh, and there's Vishnu, and there's Shiva. Why Krishna? Because it's very rare that anyone has a proper understanding of Krishna. Krishna is Purna Bhagavan. He is Bhagavan displaying all of his opulences to the fullest degree. Ram was very careful to do things very properly according to giving an example of how men and women should live in this world. He was extremely dutiful in every way. And that is his supreme opulence. The absolute truth is abhigya and swarat. The absolute truth for his own totally transcendental spiritual purposes is not bound to set an example for anyone. Yes? Because he's transcendental to all these things. Although when he comes to this world, he usually does. Because Krishna tells in Gita, what great people do, the common men follow. After we read the 9 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, we get a very profound understanding of who is Krishna. We see how as Varaha Dev, he lifted the earth. We see how as Kurma Dev, he had such a gigantic size and he facilitated the churning of the ocean of milk. We read about Matsya, what kind of fish Krishna could be if he wants to be a fish. We may read about Narasingha Dev, the all-powerful man-lion. We read about the devotees like Dhruva and Prahlad and Ambarish. We read about Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan. So all these descriptions are there, which explain the whole process of creation as well. Who is Karana Dakshai Mahavishnu? Who is Garbo Dakshai Vishnu? Who is Kshiro Dakshai Vishnu? It's absolutely inconceivable, unbelievable, the power of God. Just by exhaling, unlimited universes are coming out of his body. And then in the ninth canto, we read about Ram. How that absolute truth is coming down in the role like a human to teach us Dharma in such a profound way. And then the doors open to Krishna. That same absolute, supreme, inconceivable personality, his love with his devotees is uninfluenced by any conceptions or misconceptions of this world. Because we are reading here about the absolute world. The absolute world where there is no need for rules or regulations or anything like that. It's the absolute world where there are no material bodies, where everything is Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. The absolute world where everyone's every word, thought, action, and desire is exclusively with pure ecstatic love for Krishna's pleasure. There is no trace of ego. There's no trace of greed or anger or lust or envy or any of these things. This is the absolute world. Krishna is giving us entrance into the pastimes of the absolute world, where he's free to do and according to what will bring about the deepest, most transcendental happiness in the heart of his devotee. And this is, in many leelas, Krishna is also playing the role of a human in the sense that he's following rules and regulations according to dharma, according to the principles of society. But in the highest level of his Vrindavan leela, he's showing his Abhigya Swaraj. Not only is he all-knowing, but he is completely independent. He could act as he likes. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur called him the supreme autocrat. Whatever he likes, he can do it, and it's perfect, and it's absolutely perfect. So as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that same Krishna, is following the rules and regulations very, very carefully, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes the role of a sannyasi. Before that, as a grihastha, he followed all the rules of grihastha life very excellently. And as a sannyasi, he was very, very careful about how he dealt with the opposite sex or dealt with wealthy people like kings. He wouldn't meet King Prataparudra.
One time a lady touched his feet and he ran and jumped in the Ganges. So he was very strict in many ways, in every way. And that's the same Krishna. And yet, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's playing the role of the strictest, staunchest, most incredibly profound, renounced sannyasi, he's totally absorbed in worshiping Krishna, who's stealing gopis' clothes. And Lord Chaitanya is that Krishna who's stealing the gopis' clothes. And in fact, Lord Chaitanya is the Krishna who stole, and he's the gopi who stole with clothes from one. And he's relishing those pastimes. Sometimes in the mood of Krishna, he's stealing, and sometimes in the mood of Sri Radha, he's being stolen. So in his, we were in Puri. He would not meet King Prataparudra because it was so important to establish by his example the right principles, otherwise hypocrisy. In other words, you cannot, what he's teaching us is no one, whoever we are, can ever imitate Krishna. And that's usually what happens in this world. As people see Krishna's Leela, so we can be like Krishna. And we can justify. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no one can imitate Krishna. Krishna's Krishna. The fact that he's doing these things, so much abandoning all consideration. When Krishna's having his Leela with gopis, he couldn't care less what the fools and rascals of this world may say about him. Why should he care? If he cares, that means he's influenced by this world. He couldn't care less. All that matters is gopis want me to be their husband. I'm going to be their husband, and I'm going to do it in such a way that I give them the deepest, most profound, ecstatic, incredible happiness that they could ever imagine and beyond, forever. And I'm going to find the greatest happiness by giving them the greatest happiness. And what do I care what scholars of the Bhagavad may say, or what moralists of this material world say? This is not my... That's for Ram to worry about. When I come as Ram, I worry about all those things. When I come to as Nrsimhadev, I teach those people good lessons. But here, it's me and gopis, and we're just going to enjoy Krishna's Rasa Bihari. So the fact that Krishna couldn't care less about anything or anyone, as far as that goes, except the love in the exchange beyond all moral principles of this world, shows the total completeness of his being Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of God. But knowing that he would be misunderstood, he comes again as Krishna and follows all the rules extremely carefully. But while following all the rules supremely carefully, worships and honors Krishna as the ultimate revelation of the Absolute Truth. Well, this is very significant. Krishna is... He tells everyone, don't steal. And then he steals. First he steals butter. Now he's stealing gopis' clothes. Yes? The Ten Commandments said, thou shalt not steal. Krishna's the one who wrote those commandments. He's God, There's only one God. There's no two gods. There's one God who has many manifestations and many expansions and many rasas, but there's one God. And on Mount Sinai, and then there was carved in the stone, "Thou shalt not steal." You may have seen the movie, I don't know. But very traumatic, how lightning and everything carved into the stone. And a thundering voice speaking. That's Krishna. And here he is, a little baby stealing butter. Because he's not thinking, "Oh, well, what about the Ten Commandments?" And the author. He's just thinking about the loving interactions with his devotees. And that's why we must understand the first 9 cantos before we understand the 10th cantos. Then, when we come to the 10th canto and we understand how Krishna, his love with his devotees is so absolutely, completely pure that everything is in its highest, most pristine state of prema or love. And Krishna's stealing is such a great opulence because without breaking any moral principle, he could be immoral by one category, but he's not immoral. He's totally moral. He only appears that way for people who are in the shadow of illusion. He's absolute. There can be no darkness in the sun. Krishna is like the supreme sun. There can be no darkness. There can be no hypocrisy. There could be no immorality in Krishna, because that's all darkness. That's all mundane stuff. But within the sun of Krishna, there is unlimited ways in which prema, or pure ecstatic spiritual love, is exchanged. And Shukadev Goswami is glorifying. And the 6 Goswamis, they are, this is the tree where this happened. That is Krishna. When Krishna has his loving relations with the residents of Vrindavan, there is no question of any reservations due to being misunderstood in the material world. But for all of us, up to the level of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we must, in order to enter into that scene, we cannot imitate Krishna ever, either in the material world or even in the spiritual world. When we're fully liberated, we can never imitate Krishna. Mamayavam so jiva loke jiva bhutasana, because we're eternally servants of Krishna. Raghunath Das Goswami was the Prayojana Acharya. He had manifested the highest ecstasies of the love of the gopis, but he was still chanting his rounds every day. He was still offering thousands of obeisances to devotees every day. He was still living according to the highest possible moral spiritual principles. But he's meditating and honoring Krishna's loving dealings with his gopis. That is Krishna. At Chirgat, on the bank of Yamuna, the devotees, Brijbasis, pilgrims, for many centuries, they come there and put clothes on the tree. The idea of doing that is in the spirit of this pastime. The soul, in its pure state, is infinitely in love with Krishna and is actually able to access and experience Krishna's infinite love. But the ahankar, the ego, is like a dress that covers the pure soul. The ahankar is what gives us all these conceptions of designations. That I'm a human. I'm a male or a female. I'm of this particular race. I'm of this particular religion. I'm of this particular economic background. I'm of this particular, that these are my desires. These are my fears. These are the things I want, these are the things I don't want. All of these things are upadis. They're just unwanted designations that actually have nothing to do with the soul. Anything material, anything in forgetfulness of Krishna has nothing to do with the soul. It's all like a dress. In order to have that love for Krishna, we have to become free from all of these material designations. Sarva-dharma-puritya-ya mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva-papebhyo mokshaye shame-masaja. Krishna tells in Gita, abandon all varieties of dharma and just surrender to me. I shall protect you, deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srimad Bhagavatam, the great acharyas have taught us what the supreme glory of sharanagati, of surrender. Ultimately, surrender means the surrender of our false ego so that we can truly surrender our love. Ashlisya vapadaratam panashtuma. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us this spirit of pure love of the gopis. That, my Lord, if you like, you can embrace me. If it pleases you, you can trample on me. If it pleases you, you can make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You have any right and every right to do anything you please because I am your servant unconditionally. This is Sharanagati. Manaso deho geho jo kichu mor arpilum tu alpadi nanda kishor. Krishna, my body, my mind, my home, my family, my wealth, my abilities, my intelligence, everything is yours. Use it as you like. Maro birago biyo icha toha. If you like, you can protect me. If you like, you can kill me. Makes no difference to me. Because I'm your servant, unconditional. Do what you like. Everything is yours. This conception of janasyoham ahamamati, that I am this body, I am the designations of this body, and those things relation to the body are mine. This is the basis of the false ego. And it's the cause of all suffering. And it's the wall that separates us from the treasures of the soul and our love for Krishna. Sharanagati is the simple, pure, innocent motion of the heart that Krishna, everything is yours. I am yours.
So the gopis, they just wanted Krishna to be happy. They wanted to offer everything to Krishna. They didn't want Krishna to be their husband so that they could enjoy Krishna. They wanted Krishna to be their husband so that they could give complete enjoyment to Krishna. Not on any physical or material level, but on a totally spiritual level of bhav, or spiritual love, beyond all designations. And our acharyas explained, Katyayani for the gopis is yoga maya, the expansion of Sri Radha. Because there's one energy, Parashya Shakti Vadaiva Shruyate, and all energies are emanating from that one ultimate energy. Krishna is the Shaktiman, Sri Radha is the Shakti. Mahamaya is the energy that covers people in material existence to forget their relationship with Krishna and infatuates them with these mundane egos and designations. And yoga maya is that which facilitates deeper, more intimate, loving relations with Krishna. It's the same energy. So when gopis are worshipping Katyayani, they're worshipping yoga maya. They're worshipping the divine, supreme, eternal, spiritual energy of the spiritual world. Because her name is also, because Katyayani is none different than that. It's just a matter of what your consciousness is, whether Katyayani is the spiritual energy or the material energy. In the Vedic literatures, when they talk about Durga or God's spiritual energy in the spiritual world, sometimes it's called Durga. Durga in the context of worshipping for material things is Mahamaya. Durga in the sense of worshipping for pure unalloyed love for Krishna with no ego is the spiritual energy. It's all different various designations or expansions of Sri Radha, Subhadra, the Yogamaya potency, according to our desire. It's manifested in different ways. So the gopis, they are, on one level, they're doing the traditional way people in this world at that time, the culture of how to get a good husband. People would worship Katyayani, which is Durga, material energy. So they're appearing to do that, but actually, they're worshiping Krishna's highest potency because they're asking for unalloyed, unconditional, loving service to Krishna. The verse, Nata namna janamna sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishwari bhavatad bhakti rohoita kitvai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us this. This is the fourth verse of Shikshastakam. And it develops into higher, deeper stages. I do not want wealth. I do not want the opposite sex. I do not want any of the pleasures of this world. Gross pleasures, subtle pleasures. I don't want to be known as a great scholar. I don't want followers. I don't want fame. I don't want any amount of sensual enjoyment. I don't even want liberation from suffering. Let me suffer. Doesn't matter. I only want to serve you, birth after birth after birth. Such a high state. How many can actually, from their heart of hearts, when they're going through difficulties in life, offer that prayer? We may say it. Do we really mean it? Are we really willing and eager, birth after birth, Krishna, whatever you want to do to me, I'm yours to serve? You know, when we go through a little difficulty, Krishna, save me, get me out of here. That's our aspiration. The ultimate fulfillment of this verse, the beyond
what this verse ultimately brings us to through Shikshastakam, where we're praying, I don't want any amount of pleasures, sexual pleasures, wealth pleasures, fame pleasures. Kanaka, Kamini, Pratishta, these things that people are all so eager for. I don't want any of that. It culminates in the gopis worshiping Katyayani for Krishna as their husband. Why? Because to be the husband of Krishna for them, it means absolute, total body, mind, soul, life, everything is for Krishna's happiness, nothing for me. That's what they're doing austerity for 1 month. They're just eating this habishan, this kichari. Prabhupada said it's mung dal with rice, no spice, no turmeric, no salt, no spice. And for you brahmacharis, no chilies. One full month. That's all they ate. And they would go early morning, it's very cold, it's the winter time. They would take their baths, they would make nice deities of Katyayani in the mud, of Yogamaya. And they would offer simple things and opulent things like sandalwood paste and garlands and spices and offer so many nice things. And they would pray. They were praying, in their heart of hearts, they were praying, let me just give my everything for Krishna's satisfaction. And the way they were doing that is, let Krishna be my husband. So this is pure devotional service, because they had no material desires. They had no material designations. They were liberated. And Krishna wanted to reciprocate. So early one morning, he took some very little cowherd boys who really were too young to know the difference between what boys and girls are and all that stuff. And he took their clothes. And the Brijabasis, they come and offer their clothes to that tree. This is the symbolism of it. Take away our egos. Krishna, I offer you my life. We're praying, take away this ego that keeps me away from you. All my nadanam na janam na sundarim. This verse that we have just cited from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is actually the spirit of putting your clothes on the branches of those trees, or putting a cloth on those trees. I'm not a Brahman Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra. I'm not a Brahmachari Grihastha Vanaprastha Sannyas. I'm not a man, woman. I'm not of any race or anything. I'm not learned or illiterate. I'm just your eternal servant of the servant of the servant. Even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his ecstasies in Puri, it's very interesting when he would come out of his deepest, most profound ecstasies of Radha Bhava, he would explain it in such a way. He wasn't Radharani, even though he is Radharani. He wasn't Radharani playing with Krishna. He was always the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. Radharani and Gopinath in a cave in Govardhan, and one of the gopis tells him, go collect flowers and bring it to them, and they're collecting. Chatak Parvata, when he goes into the ocean, he comes out and he says, I was watching, I was seeing Krishna and gopis and Radha having their splashing fights.
His highest ecstasies were always in the mood of being the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. For Krishna's satisfaction. So, unfortunately, the material energy, the illusory energy of Maya, is so powerful that she can cover us with so many different kinds of dresses of illusory conceptions. And as soon as we start identifying with those material designations, then a whole array of unwanted desires start affecting us. We see some people, they are just, they have to have more and more money. Some people have to have more fame. Some have to have more prestige. Some have to have more and more sex. Some have to have more and more knowledge to show people that they have. Some people have to, you know, sometimes a scientist, just the satisfaction of knowing that I have discovered something that nobody's ever seen. If there's so many different, according to one's guna and one's karma and the ego, one is covered up by the clothes, and then along with it come so many distractions. Well, even Maya does the same thing to a devotee. If just becoming a devotee and taking the external forms of doing our sadhana and dressing in a certain way and following certain regulative principles, if that was enough, we wouldn't need all this information. But the reality, even if we start doing those things, if we do them for the wrong purposes, we're not going to really be doing them right for very long. We can start getting an ego that I'm better than you because I know more than you. I'm better than you because I can fast longer than you. I'm better than you because I've gone to more Mangalartis than you. I'm better than you because I've dressed the deities more than you. Or I could cook better than you. Or more people dance in my kirtans than you. Or I have CDs and you don't have CDs. Or I'm better than you because my husband is a counselor. I'm better than you because my wife is on a marriage board or whatever it's. Or I'm better than you because my son is Gauranga. I'm only joking, Mataji. I was putting everyone to sleep, so I had to say something like that. So anyways, whatever I'm saying is joking. Analogies. But, you know, the reality is that in whatever situation we're in, Maya is there to try to trap us by putting these dresses on us, with these designations, to inflate our egos.
And it's very important that we understand when we put the trees of our the cloth of our egos on these trees, it really means giving up all these sense of designations so that we're really in that spirit for Krishna's pleasure. It's not about me. And in the name of religion in the world today, there's probably the hugest amount of false ego. It's quite amazing. As much as politics, as much as business and industry, there is ego and envy and everything else in the name of religion. All religions. That's how Maya is there to trap us at every step. Therefore, it's so important to understand what real religion actually is. It's not about our designations, our titles. It's not even so much about our external accomplishments. It's about how much we've actually given up our false egos. How much we're actually there. Nadanam nadanam nasundari. Our motivation is really for Krishna. Krishna is not a facility to give spiritual credibility to fulfilling my ego's desires. That's what usually happens in the name of religion and God throughout history of the world, is God becomes like a facility to justify my ego and my desires and give it absolute credibility. So therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, before even giving this verse, Natanam Najanam Nasundari, he's teaching us Trinada Bisunichena. Amani Namana Dena Kirtaniya Sadadi. And this is the gopis in the highest state. The most humility. Total most surrender for the will of Krishna without any material desires, without any material designations. Why do they want Krishna to be their husband in this sense? They are willing to go to hell forever to cure him of a headache for 1 second. So being in this role, I could do that the best. That is their spirit. It's the purest love. And in today's verse, Krishna is telling the gopis, because now they're fully dressed, he gave their clothes back to them, but they didn't want to go anywhere because they were happy with Krishna. With or without their clothes, they just wanted to satisfy Krishna. Everything was for Krishna. Krishna sent them back to perform their duties in the village of Braj. So as we are performing our duties, wherever they may be, we cannot imitate gopis, but we honor and worship the principle of their egoless surrender, their pure love in that state as the highest aspiration and the ultimate goal of chanting the holy names. Any questions?
Prabhuji, you are speaking about the highest standard of God is sampradaya. Is that na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam. So I always have this doubt in my mind is we try to go on that level, means we really struggle to come to that level of na dhanam na janam na sundarim. But we have seen this material world, it's a really crazy place and we really want to get out from this mess. So when Mahaprabhu says na janmani janmani, that is very fearful. We don't want to come here. We want to serve Krishna in spiritual world but not in this material world, because it is so difficult to maintain this consciousness and these anarthas are always haunting us, and in that circumstances to maintain this standard is so difficult. So we want to serve, but we don't want to serve in this material world. We want to serve in spiritual world only. So that is not the standard which Mahaprabhu wants. Mahaprabhu wants to do it this way. So we cannot get that pure devotional nectar if we have this consciousness, or Mahaprabhu can give us some concession and we can do it in spiritual world.
Thank you, thank you. For the very reason, look at this book, it's coming from the Sharanagati library. Do you get your books from the Sharanagati library? In other words, all these books are ultimately for this purpose of Sharanagati, what pleases Krishna. And this is the extent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's selfless devotional service. Your question is actually an appreciation of the depth of what he's saying. Because for so many of us, we recite this Shikshastakam sometimes every day and we think, very nice, I know it by memory and I'm trying to live by it. But it's only by grace that we can actually understand even a clue of what's being said with some realization. And this is such a profound state that I just want to be your servant, birth after birth after birth. That means my willingness, Krishna, even if you want me to suffer, even if you want me to be tested by all these distractions, ultimately I'm yours. I have no conditions. The spiritual world, everything is so easy and nice, so let me just go there. That's also a good prayer. You can pray like that if you like. But ultimately, whatever pleases Krishna. Ashlasya bhapadratam panashtamam. In other words, what you're saying is you want Krishna to embrace you, but you don't want him to trample on you. Yes? Hari Hari. It's a higher state of pure love. Krishna, I'm yours. At the same time, we're praying to Krishna to free us from the clutches of the ego. We're praying to Krishna to purify us from lust and envy and anger and greed and arrogance and illusion, all the things that keep us bound to this world. So in that sense, we want to have the consciousness of the spiritual world. We want to have that pure, unalloyed consciousness of the spiritual world beyond the influences of Maya
not because we want to enjoy that state, but because we want to be enjoyed by that state, because then we can actually offer Krishna pure love. And in that pure love, wherever you want me, Krishna, I'm yours. So it's good that you're being humbled by that prayer. Would you like to say anything else?
Raja, this consciousness, if you don't get in this lifetime, then what is the result we'll get?
It's only by Krishna's grace, by Sri Radha's grace, that we can ever have access to this consciousness. So we have to totally put our, this is Sharanagati. Without your grace, I cannot have a pure heart. Without your grace, I cannot overcome lust or envy or anger or pride or greed. These are very powerful forces. Selfishness, ego, it's only by grace. And bhakti is to humble ourselves to that grace. We're dependent on that grace. And we're praying for that grace. And we're living in such a way, Krishna tells in Gita, that if you just surrender to me sincerely, I will preserve what you have and I will carry what you lack. Carry what you lack means His grace will subsidize whatever we're lacking. And that is our ultimate hope. If you thought that you can do it in this lifetime, you're disqualified. But if you know that you cannot do it in this lifetime, and like a baby crying for mother, trying our very best in every way, then by Krishna's grace and Radharani's grace, then He will do it for you in this lifetime.
Raja, I'm asking a very straightforward question. Is from last 20, today is 25th birthday of Gopinath.
And today or tomorrow?
Tomorrow. So from last so many years we are hearing your classes. Now, I remember in early years, Maharaj, we were hearing lots of classes of yours. And somehow I was always feeling it that I was like a spoon feeding from you. Every time I was so much dependable, I was feeling it, you are there, so I'm protected. But for last about 2-3 years I'm watching that you are not able to give so much time to us and we are feeling very, I'm talking about myself, Maharaj. Feeling a little bit more insecure. So I would like to know very clearly that in your physical absence in Gopinath temple, what we should take it very seriously in our Krishna consciousness, by which we can maintain the fire of Krishna consciousness very seriously, and our Krishna consciousness goes on increasing as and when our years increases, our age increases in this material world. And don't compromise Krishna consciousness at all, even if you are not physically present over here. What are the points that we have to take it very seriously, that in your absence also we can maintain Krishna consciousness very seriously and the fire goes on increasing also?
Much chita mad gata prona. Krishna tells Gita that my devotees, they come together to discuss my glories and my names. And they take great pleasure doing so. Tatra tishtami narada yatra gayanti madbhakta. Krishna tells, I am wherever my devotees have come together to chant my names and glories. Srila Prabhupada, who is our founder, Acharya, all any of us could do is to share Prabhupada's message and share Prabhupada's grace. We are nothing except little messengers of Srila Prabhupada's grace.
And Prabhupada himself, our founder Acharya, when it appeared he could leave the world to his very new devotees who he was spoon-feeding, he said, if you're chanting Hare Krishna together and I'm chanting, we're always together. There's the Vani and there's the Vapu. There's the physical presence and there's the instructions. And when a little bird is kind of kicked out of the nest to fly on its own, it's quite scary for the little bird, but it's necessary to actually take responsibility for all that that little bird has been given. So in the beginning stages of Krishna conscious, we're taking and taking and taking. But then at a certain point, to make more advancement, we have to give what we've been taken. And in doing so, of course, we have to keep taking. But the realization of it comes as we're trying to, through our service, through our sharing, through our giving. That's responsibility. Our tendency is we want things to just stay the way we once liked them. But that's just never the way things are. It's just not the way things are. We could look at so many histories. If we look at Christianity, I'm sure every Christian would have liked to just be 6 or 12 people just sitting with Jesus all day and night. And all of a sudden he has thousands of followers, and then all of a sudden he's crucified, and then all of a sudden he's not there anymore. So it's not that they just said, well, you know, what's the use? Why is it not? Why aren't we just sitting on the bank of the Sea of Galilee with Jesus, 12 of us now? You know, there's Romans trying to kill us, and Jesus is gone, and everybody, they carried on. Yes? Srila Prabhupada, he began with just a few people, and everybody was just a little family, and then soon he was all over the world, and those people had to take so many responsibilities, and then he left. So we can't depend on a circumstance that we once had to be forever. It's not the way we grow, and it's not the reality of the world. If we actually surrendering to Krishna, we have to adjust to the particular scenario of the time with all that we've been given. Yes? This is natural.
What are the precautions that we have to take in your absence that our Krishna consciousness has not been sacrificed?
In one sense, when a little child is being disciplined by the parents, they grow. But at a certain point where they're not being disciplined and they have to make decisions on their own, on the basis of what they've learned, they actually have power to grow more. Yes? We need each other. This is the instruction that Prabhupada has always given us. We need each other. And we should keep the higher principle always between each other.
We shouldn't let the mundane ego or mundane conceptions. Krishna tells, Prabhupada uses the example that bamboo trees are growing from the same root, the bamboo branch, the bamboo stalks. They're growing from the same root. And wind comes, makes them rub, and creates fire. And it burns down the forest. So that's the way the world is. The winds of material energy are going to always try to create friction between us. And we have to be above and beyond all this. And that doesn't mean everybody else has to be above and beyond this in order to work with me. That means we have to be above up. Each of us has to take the responsibility to be above and beyond this, to work with others. Because our own philosophy is we start applying it to everyone else except ourselves. That's another way of Maya tricking us. So it's very important that the purpose of this temple is to create a community of devotees who are focused on a higher principle. And as we grow older in our Krishna consciousness, we should feel the weight of a heavier responsibility to actually be living in this according to this principle and actually contributing the spirit to the community. And if we're only contributing when things are favorable, then we're not contributing much of anything. We have to contribute this principle of giving and receiving on this higher principle of Vaishnava etiquette, Vaishnava exchange, selfless service, beyond our ego, beyond everyone else's ego. It's not that I can only become purified when everybody else is purified. Everybody else's anarthas are there to help me become purified. Yes? We expect some ideal situation. But if it was an ideal situation, you would make no advancement. The ideal situation is when we're actually agreeing on a higher principle. And when that's not there, I still hold my integrity for that higher principle. That's how we progress. And as we grow, we should sense more of a responsibility to be a protector and caretaker of the Vaishnava Dharma, of the Vaishnava culture. And in order to do that, we really have to access a lot of grace. Because as we grow, we realize how much responsibility we have now and how weak and inefficient we are. Yes? That's the way we're supposed to feel. When Prabhupada was on Jaladutta, he wasn't, "My guru has given me responsibility to spread this mission through the world. I know the Bhagavatam, I will do it." He was praying, "Krishna, I have no power. Only if you give me the words, only your grace can make it happen." So in our situations, we have, as we are become more years in our devotional service, we actually have more responsibility to emulate and live by these principles and to try to create real unity in devotion within the community. But yet we're so inefficient and insufficient. But this responsibility is on our head. So how we have to really, really try to live and put aside all of these designations, anarthas, and misconceptions, and false expectations, and really live by these truths.
and how we have to actually really take shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam and really take shelter of Krishna's holy names and really take shelter of these beautiful prayers and bhajans, really take shelter of Radha Gopinath who has given us everything, really take shelter of Srila Prabhupada who has given everything, really take shelter of each other for support.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. Thank you.
Nothing else. This is quite historical. There's no more questions. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.